What the fuck was that?
I don't know. I think it's getting to people, Dad, the tension.
He ate my fucking chicken.
Mm-hmm.
So what next? Stick his cock into my potato salad?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Sweet Smell of Succession, an unofficial podcast about the HBO original series Succession. I'm David Chen, and joining me, as always, she is the co-host of Extra Great and the editor-at-large at Primetimer.com, Tara Ariano. How are you doing tonight, Tara?
I'm doing well. I've been a little nervous about the live format, but we'll talk about it. How are you?
I'm doing well. Few things that are different about this week's recording of the podcast. First of all, we are broadcasting live because the Succession finale has just occurred, and I thought it would be a great idea for us to just get our thoughts on the finale out there as soon as humanly possible, because I had a feeling that it was going to be an episode that a lot of people would want to talk about, like, really quickly, you know, because I was hoping that it would be an eventful one, and I think the episode lived up to it. So we're broadcasting live, and so that's one thing. You might hear us talk about some people commenting in the chat room. And then the other thing is we, as I just mentioned, we're recording right after the episode ends. Now, people who are used to listening to this podcast might understand that Tara, mostly Tara, somewhat me, put a lot of work into kind of preparing the show notes for the episode before we go live. But this week we're doing things a little bit different, right, Tara?
Yes. As a TV critic, I've been lucky enough to get screeners of the episodes ahead of time for the whole season, except the finale. And I thought when they announced it, because I did email a publicist before this one aired, just to see if we would be getting it, because you never know. And then she said there will not be a screener. And I thought, well, okay, just not for me. Some people will get it. And then Dave sent me a tweet today from Noel Murray, who's been recapping it for the New York Times, and said not even he was getting it. So it's like, okay, no one got it. Fine. I guess I can't be mad. But yeah, the way I normally go, because I could watch the episode in advance, is that I would watch it, do the detailed plot summary that you guys have all been listening to all season. And then after we've both had a chance to watch it, then we would record. Obviously, we do not have time to do that unless we were going to spend several hours for me to watch it twice, which I normally do. So this will be a little more off the cuff. So we'll see
it's
how
gonna
it
be a much looser recap tonight. You're going to get to hear more of our raw reaction to things, which I think will be very appropriate for this episode. So before we get to the main events of the episode, we're going to do some follow-ups. We want to do some overall thoughts of the episode. We're going to do some recap of the episode, conclude with our winners and losers of the week, as well as quote of the week, and finally have overall thoughts on this season. Before we get to any of that, though, I do just want to give one quick shout-out again to all of the Kickstarter backers that supported this show. This podcast would not have existed without you. And I want to thank Tara for just taking a chance with me and doing a podcast. This is the first podcast I've ever had with Tara, and it has been such a great experience. I've really enjoyed doing the show with her, really enjoyed the community of listeners that have kind of sprung up around this podcast. Every episode of this podcast has received more downloads than the previous episode, and it's just been really amazing to see. So wanted to thank our listeners, and also a big thanks to Tara. You know, Tara, it's just been so much fun working with you. So thanks for taking a shot at doing a podcast with me, Tara. Really appreciate it.
Back at you hundredfold. It's been super duper fun, and thank you for thinking of me and for proposing that we do this, because it's been so worth it and such a treat.
I've learned so much from Tara about TV recapping and podcasting, and you know, it might sound like I'm being sarcastic. I'm being 100% serious. Like, she's taught me a lot of things, and I'm so grateful. And I will just say that in terms of like future Tara David collaborations, the easiest way to keep an eye out for them is to just follow us on Twitter. Tara's at Tara Ariano, and I'm at Dave Chensky. That's Dave Chen, SKY. And so, yeah, we will. I would say I would put money on us collaborating again on something.
I hope so.
Not sure what it'll be, but we'll see. There will be a Succession season 3. My guess is there'll probably be a Kickstarter for that show and podcast as well. So stay tuned to this feed if you want to receive another season. We'll probably release an announcement about that when the time comes. So
we'll let you have a break. We'll let you, Dave, have a break before we make you do anything else.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. So anyway, I just wanted to say thanks to our listeners. Thanks to Tara. Let's dive into this week's episode. So this is a discussion of season 2, episode 10. This is Not for Tears. Before we get to that, a couple follow-ups from last week's episode. So Last week's episode, season 2, episode 9, we got an email from Juan, who wrote into successionpodcast@gmail.com. First of all, the podcast is great. It's the first thing I listen to on Monday mornings. Regarding your comments on the episode 9, DC, the B-plot being confusing and opaque, I think that story was inspired by how Mohammed bin Salman consolidated his power in Saudi Arabia. In 2017, he detained more than 400 people, including several members of the royal family at the Ritz-Carlton in Riyadh under corruption charges. Those people were subjected to torture and extortion and were forced to transfer part of their fortune to the Saudi government. I believe what we saw last week was a similar story, but from the POV of those being shook down. Because of that, I don't think Edward is an unreliable narrator, but that he's acting under duress and visibly scared, which is interesting since up to this point he's always seemed so collected, and when he was introduced, even contemptuous. Maybe what the show is trying to say with all this is that these will be very unreliable partners at best. Keep it
very
up.
Very perceptive one.
Yeah, very perceptive. Keep it up. Greetings from Argentina. Yeah, so that was a great point from Juan about how last week's episode was very likely inspired by a real-life incident in Riyadh, in which Mohammed bin Salman detained a bunch of important people in his country. And I think Juan was correct that these might be unreliable partners, right?
Yeah, they're even at the Four Seasons in Turkey. So yeah, great call on that one, Juan. Good job.
Another thing I wanted to point out about last week's episode was that there's a question on the show last week, in my opinion, an open question of whether Shiv was being serious or not when she promised all that stuff to that woman that was going to testify, right? Yeah, Kira. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. The reaction I saw online was mixed, but it was probably 95% in favor of Tara's interpretation, which is that that everything Shiv said was a lie, and that she did it just for the brownie points with Dad. So I just wanted to call that out, and also I actually think at the end of this episode we still aren't quite sure. There are two alternate interpretations out there, but Tara is probably absolutely right about that one, as usual. So,
remains to be seen.
It remains to be seen. It remains to be seen. Those are follow-ups from last week's. Let's get into this week's episode, season 2, episode 10, This Is Not For Tears, or as my wife called it when we were watching it, the most expensive bottle episode ever made. I mean, most of the episode takes place in one location, but it is constantly, it's very ostentatious in how it films the yacht and the helipad and all the wealth surrounding the Roys in a way that I found very vicariously enjoyable. Let's talk about overall thoughts on the episode. I mean, Tara, this is a season finale that they did not send you an advanced screener for because presumably it would contain some explosive revelations.
Yep.
So while watching the episode, did you feel like, hey, this was worth it? This was worth the lead up. What do you think?
For most of it, I was like, this is more or less what I thought this episode would be based on the trailer that aired after the penultimate episode of the season last week. A lot of sitting around, a very awkward dinner, which, of course, we definitely got. I guess it was a breakfast. But then it did have a big, big twist at the end that I did not see coming.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I can see why they held it back.
Yeah.
What did you think?
I quite liked it a lot. Yeah. I thought it was great. The ending is one for the books and we'll get to it, but yeah, I felt like, let's just put it this way, like heading into this episode, I think something I've been talking to you about is been a little bit worried at how some of the storytelling feels like it's spinning a little bit out of control, like they're introducing all these subplots. I don't have any confidence that they're going to tie all of them up. And they didn't tie all of them up. There's a bunch of things that weren't resolved in any satisfying way. But there were other things that I didn't think they would tie up that they did. You know what I mean? Like the things that they addressed in this episode were not necessarily things I thought they would address, but they did address them in fairly satisfying fashion. So overall, I thought it was a highly enjoyable finale. And we'll talk about overall thoughts on the season later on in this episode, but I had a great time watching it. So, those are overall thoughts on the episode. Now, we don't have a extra detailed recap, which is what we usually do on the show, but we do have a breakdown of the kind of three main plots, right, Tara?
Yes. And we'll do them in ascending order. So starting with our C plot.
Ascending order of importance, right?
Exactly, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So we'll start with our C plot, which is Willa's play might ruin Connor. Willa has been sitting out the past couple of big family outings, but she does come on this one, even though she's very nervous about leaving the play while it's still in production and scared about looking at reviews, and says she doesn't even care. She's not going to look. And Connor sort of tells her, well, I have to look because if it tanks, I'm going to be fucked financially. And so that while they're on the boat, he gets a bundle of clippings emailed to him from a publicist, presumably at Waystar, and starts going through them. And she says, Willa says, I'm not even going to read them. I'll just figure it out from your face. And he sort of starts laughing, and she thinks that means it's good. Like, he's surprised.
Yeah.
But no, she just wants to go straight to the Times review. And apparently it is so bad, she screams and throws his tablet overboard.
Yeah. So I really liked the scene that you're referring to. I liked all the touches. There's this moment when she says, you know, find me a good one. And then you see him make the scrolling gesture on the iPad.
Yeah.
Like, he's making the gesture of like, oh, I'm just flipping through like 30, you know, headlines right now. And he can't.
Well, because he had said they're mixed, which is obviously a lie. Like, she should have seen through that and realized if he's saying they're mixed, that means they're bad.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I would not think that, like, at the beginning of the season, I would not have thought that like Willa's playwriting career is what would be, you know, one of the three main plots of the finale. But
yeah,
I can't complain. You know, I think that it allows certain things to come to a head, like when Connor finally asks Logan for money, and Logan, this is an episode of Logan saying what he really feels to all of his kids, right?
Yep.
And just that kind of catharsis, that honesty, is mm-hmm. enough to give the episode a lot of power, because so much of the show is about what's not said to these people, right?
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. That's so a great point. They have a conversation where Logan says, you know, I'll give you $100 million if you will stop your run for presidency, which is embarrassing us. And I felt like, oh my gosh, Logan Roy is channeling Tara so hard right now.
Because in my notes, I have that line, and then under it, in all caps, yes, like 10 S's, because this is all I have wanted all season. Yeah, Connor starts with an ask that's kind of reasonable, which is he wants one of the Royco papers to give the play a favorable review, something they can put on the posters to try to stop the bleeding. And Logan doesn't necessarily agree to that. And so
kind of reasonable, Tara. I'm surprised, as someone who has made a living reviewing, you would probably react very badly if someone leaned on you for a positive review, right?
Not if I was Logan. If I'm the publisher, skin off my back.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, yes, if you were a critic that worked for one of his papers, you would have, that would offend you. But on the other hand, you have to know that kind of thing is happening, probably.
Yeah, you know.
If you work for the New York Observer, you have to know you're not going to be putting in any big exposés about Jared Kushner. You're just not.
Indeed.
As you said, Logan will consider making Connor whole to the tune of $100 million. How he arrived at that amount, I'm sure I don't know. He says he's losing $500,000 a week on the play.
Yeah.
But like, how many weeks can it be running? Like, if it's getting these bad reviews, just shut it down. But regardless, Logan says he will consider it if Connor ends the campaign to demonstrate his good judgment, because it is embarrassing. And he's right. It is embarrassing.
like Tara would probably offer Connor $100 million as well if she had the money, you know, just to put a stop to this. So,
I mean, let's not get crazy. But yes, I'm very happy that this silliness is about to end, probably.
Is it, though? Because by the end of the episode, it's not resolved, right, as far as I can remember.
Well, right. But if Logan isn't going to give him any more money, that's the end of it in either case.
Right. Because either Connor gets the money and ends his presidency, or he runs out of money. Yeah.
Right. Yes. And really? I'm sure he doesn't want to be president less than he doesn't want to be rich. You know what I mean?
Real catch 22 there for Connor.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's one of the main subplots, is we finally get confirmation that the world thinks Willa's play is terrible. And it is a boondoggle. So,
were you kind of secretly hoping that it might get, you know, just one good review? Because I kind of hoped everyone would be wrong and that she would turn out to actually be talented.
I think they took it a little too far with the negative reviews. I mean, there's always usually at least an Armand White-esque character out there who's going to write like, oh my God, like, people didn't realize the brilliance of Sands. You know, mm-hmm. like, there's somebody, like just in the environment that in the media environment that we live in today, right? I mean, I'm not even casting aspersions. I'm just saying a fact, right? That like,
I mean, this is how you get clicks, is being contrarian.
I'm not even saying that that's what they're doing to get clicks. I'm saying the multiplicity of like brains out in the world writing things, you know, will allow you to get. Yours is the more cynical view, which I don't necessarily disagree with, but just the number of opinions out there, everyone has one. There's got to be somebody who liked it. So maybe they went a little bit too over top with everyone hating it. So I don't
it's
know.
True. I was earlier tonight watching an episode of the current PBS masterpiece show Press. And this is a future episode because we got screeners of that as well. And someone was trying to cite reaction to a story that this tabloid did by citing Twitter. And the editor of this newspaper is saying, well, Twitter's nothing. You can find anything you want on Twitter. And this is how sometimes in a movie that's been dumped in January, you will see in a commercial that people are like just saying this movie was great at whoever, like someone you've never heard of, because they trolled Twitter to try and find one good reaction. So you're right. I guess that is less cynical, question mark. I'm not sure which is.
Yeah, you're right. Good. You know, maybe it's not less cynical, but point being, poor Willa, really sad that no one reviewed her play well, and actually mildly implausible, as we're saying. But anyway, that's how that plot line wrapped up. What is the next higher up subplot that's of importance?
Honestly, the B and C plot were kind of interchangeable in terms of how big they are. But so as you've already said, the whole family is getting together on the yacht along with several members of the top team that are not related, including all the usual suspects, Jerry, Laird and Carl, who have been sprung from Turkey, Frank. That's it, right? Those are the only non-family people. And then Naomi comes with Kendall. I think that's it.
Yeah,
right?
I think that's right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So while they're getting on this yacht, which, by the way, like to call it a boat is so misleading. This is like this. It's like a medium-sized apartment building. This size of this thing. It has multiple little motorboats on the side of it. Like it has a pool. It's enormous. It's ridiculous.
It has a pool, like a fitness room. You know, servants' quarters, and a very high staff to. I guess guest ratio, right? Like there's tons of like wait staff and everything. It looks amazing.
Yep. There's an inflatable slide where you can slide into the ocean or the sea, I guess, because they're in the Mediterranean. And like, I don't want to fall for the creature comforts that they show in the show because I know, it's mostly about how all of this is corrupt. But like that did look really fun.
It's totally did. Totally did.
Anyway. Tom and Shiv are getting on this on the yacht, and Shiv is telling him that she's managed to set up a threesome with a willing woman, and it turns out to be a pedicurist that they have hired, like I guess just an esthetician who's going to work on anyone who needs it throughout the trip. And the purpose of this is to try to convince Tom to get on board with the concept of the open marriage, which we know from the whole season. And since she sprang it on him on, as he says tonight, their fucking wedding night, he hasn't been totally okay about it. And so when the time actually comes, she's ready to pull the trigger and, you know, do the knock to get this woman up. And he says, you know, maybe instead what, you know, I'll just watch. Or maybe she can just watch, or maybe she can go in the bathroom and watch through the keyhole. And Shiv's, you know, saying it's kind of sounding like you want to downgrade our threesome to a twosome. And he's protesting in various ways. He's not sure he's going to be able to perform. He says he's never played a stadium show before, which is kind of funny. But ultimately, it comes down to what we all know, which is he's fundamentally not OK with this.
Yeah. And they go from cove to cove. Until they find the right cove where they can have like a little afternoon picnic, and they finally have a big confrontation about it. And this is not something that I expected would come to a head in the finale. This is one of those plot lines that I'm like, oh, I thought that would just kind of simmer in the background for like 4 years until Tom finally exploded. But it happened during this episode where he finally has it out with Shiv. And it's very cathartic, you know. It's something that's been building for the whole season, right? This thing that happened to him on his wedding night that was pretty objectively, fundamentally unjust, right?
It's clearly still a trauma that he hasn't worked through, and you know, maybe shouldn't, because it wasn't okay what she asked under the circumstances.
Yeah, yeah.
But his line is, "I wonder if the sad I'd be without you is worse than the sad I get being with you," which is finally the thing that makes her stop joking around in their usual mean way and realize, oh, he is serious and I have wronged him and I feel bad.
Yeah, like there's a lot of emotion on both their faces. Like, I did not think, especially after last episode, that my heart would be going out to Tom Wamsgams, a character who has been shown at other times to be fairly despicable, right? You know,
yep.
And the performance of both Matthew McFadden and Sarah Snook just really sold it for me that, wow, like, she is finally realizing the full extent of the damage that she's doing and genuinely remorseful for it, I think, right?
Have you been following the... what's his name? The star of, now I can't remember, the star of Silicon Valley plays Richard. I got to look it up.
Thomas Middleditch.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Like, I was going to say Hiddleston. I knew that that was wrong. that he gave an interview with Playboy. This is a couple of weeks ago now, where he talks about his marriage and said he and his wife are in an open marriage, and that he sort of sprang it on her under similar circumstances. He didn't say it was on their wedding night, but he said it was after they were married.
Uh-huh.
And said in the interview that, you know, she probably would not want him to talk about this in public, and they fight about it all the time. So it's like, A, sounds like it's not really working for your relationship, but B, gross. Like, maybe have this conversation with your partner before you lock her down with marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And C, since he's also in the HBO family, I wonder if they were watching this tonight and if either of them saw themselves in this situation and thought it's time to make a change.
Wow. Okay.
I'm just wondering.
But... yeah, I think that, you know, many of us are in relationships or have been in relationships who can, like, relate to this idea of fundamental misalignment, right, with your significant other. And so I definitely felt it in the scene. And this is the scene, I think, that causes Shiv to try to have Tom spared, right?
Mm-hmm.
Later on.
Which is what happens in the A plot. So we might as well just get to it, since that's most of the episode, which is who will take the blame for the crisis at hand. So when we open the episode, Greg is about to testify all by his lonesome, which I thought, who trusted him to do this by himself? But, you know, he doesn't fuck it up worse than Tom, which, you know, low bar, but still doesn't do great. Gets too wordy, gets called on it by Gil, is generally weird. But while this is going on, Hugo is watching. He's in a car somewhere in Austria, or on his way to Vienna anyway, with Logan. And Logan has a working list of the heads that he's ready to cut, which are, and I paused it to get them all down correctly, Jerry, Sid, who's the head of ATN, the news network, Frank, obviously we know, Ray is the Patch Dara character. He's one of the hangers on who was, you know, around in the bore on the floor scene. He was the one who was going to pee in a bucket until Logan told him not to. And Carl. And then Hugo thinks that's a good list, but also tries to throw Carolina in there, which, like, over my dead body, do you fire Carolina? I love her. I want her to have a bigger part in the show. So no.
Carolina is an awesome character. You know, she is absorbed so much. You don't reward that by throwing her out. But anyway. Yeah.
No, I love that actor too. Dagmara Demenchik. If you've never seen a movie called Higher Ground, seek it out because she's incredible in it. Anyway, it's also in this scene that we find out Roman is safe after his ordeal in Turkey. And, you know, we'll get more from him later. But yeah, they're on their way to this to try and shore up support from some big shareholder when another big shareholder named Philippe calls Logan and says he's been taking soundings and they think the person who needs to take the fall should be Logan himself. And Logan doesn't blow up. He just takes it in, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's one person that you can't really blow up towards, I think.
No.
He's theoretically a powerful shareholder of the company. Mm-hmm. But also probably Logan is genuinely wondering whether the guy's right. You know, I think he's maybe actually self-reflecting there a little bit.
Yeah.
So then they all go on this boat and have a classic, like, awkward succession conversation about, like, such a weird thing for Logan to gather them all together. Jerry kind of explains the reasoning, which is, like, we all witness it. We all have a hand in it, basically, right? Like, he's making it so that everyone is complicit in it.
Yep.
And then they kind of have this conversation where everyone kind of toys around with every single character and whether they would be a good idea to have take the blame.
Well, before that, we also get the Turkey delegation arrives, and they have to give their debrief just to Logan. And it's very perfunctory. Oh, like, yeah. Logan doesn't even help, doesn't hug Roman. Like, not that we would necessarily expect him to, but even for show, I mean, I guess he doesn't do for show in front of the top team. But, like, he honestly could have died. Like, his life was potentially really in peril. And he's just like, yeah, yeah, come into this room and tell me how it went. And so Laird is really blue-skying how things went. And Roman says, yes, they do. They are interested. And, yes, we could go private, but I think they're flaky. And, you know, that's kind of where it ends. Like, he makes his case persuasively enough that they were just saying what they needed to say to get through it, and that calls Edward a, like, a, you know, a 3 a.m. scotch and never call you kind of guy. And Laird keeps pushing and saying, no, 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 it's going to work. It's going to work. But Logan doesn't buy it. And Carl backs Roman up. But what was interesting to me about this is that Laird keeps saying that Roman, when he was pitching, I forget the name, but Edward's father, that it was amazing and he closed it and he was so good. And it's like, why did this happen off screen? Like, I feel like maybe it was just compressed because we were so close to the end, but, like, as good as Roman is in this scene explaining why this is a bad deal for the Azerbaijanis, because Laird says they need to diversify their portfolio, and Roman's like, if that's true, they shouldn't make a play with one billions and billions of dollars, you know, company, which was what this would be. They should have a lot of different little deals. And that's not what they're doing. And even that alone is like, shit, Roman does know things. But I wish we could have seen his pitch and, like, prove it to us as viewers that, like, oh, he isn't a total idiot.
Agreed. Although I think we see enough of Roman being competent from the last episode that I am convinced that he has actually made some growth. Not enough to be sole COO, but enough that I'm like, oh, the character has grown a little bit in terms of his skill level and his awareness and even self-awareness.
Yeah.
So I was a little bit impressed. But I think the fundamentals of that scene were that they needed a sure thing, and Roman's like, it's not a sure thing, right?
No,
and,
it's not.
And it, like, the stakes are so high, they need a sure thing, and it's not a sure thing. So, and, you know, that's the first of, like, a couple of things that Logan pursues this episode to try to get out of his predicament. The other one, of course, being meeting Stewie, right?
Right.
Where they propose he proposes a pretty good deal, like, spin off the cruise division, you get these board seats, et cetera, et cetera. And Stewie's basically like, I think we can win at trial, basically, right? Like, we don't need to take the plea deal.
Right.
And I just love Stewie as a character. I think that performance is awesome. And so it was great to see him again. Basically, You see them exploring everything that they could do other than blood sacrifice, and they fail at finding any alternatives, right?
Right. But the other thing that happens before the blood sacrifice discussion is when Logan arrives, he sees that Naomi is there, and apparently Kendall didn't run it by him before he invited her. So Logan first is like, well, I'm worried about us having enough provisions. Like, really? Because I'm pretty sure you probably have 15 times as many crab legs as you would ever possibly eat based on what we saw you throw out in the season premiere. But the real issue is twofold. One, he says he's worried about privacy since she's outside of the family. And Kendall tries to say, I think she's good for me. Like, give her a chance. Like, trying to make noises like he wants her around for the long term. But then Logan says what the real issue is, that he doesn't want Kendall to be fucked up on drugs, and he assumes that Naomi is, probably correctly based on what we've seen.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I'm a little bit, you know, we'll talk about this at the end, but the Naomi subplot is kind of one of my disappointments this season. I wish they had developed that a little bit more. It almost felt like the episodes were out of order, like that they had that episode with Kendall, you know,
Jennifer,
and Jennifer, and then, like, oh, now he's back with Naomi again, you know.
Yeah.
And I guess it's just to show that, hey, he's wild and crazy, he's out of control, but, like, I don't know that it makes for, like, super satisfying storytelling. That, like, if that had been a romantic subplot that had been better built up over the season, I think this moment that he has parting with her would be a little bit more impactful. Rather than, like, hey, this whole Jennifer character who I don't think we'll ever see again on the show. Right.
Oh, so, definitely not.
Yeah. So,
I mean, her career is probably ruined by being in Willa's play anyway. But yeah, Kendall does send Naomi away. And she tells him to come with her. And honestly, he should. Like, he should.
Yeah.
You know, everyone should leave this family. This is what I've been saying all along. But Kendall protests. He always, you know, sticks up for daddy and tells Naomi he loves me. I think it's just a wrong kind of love expression. And she says he loves the broken you. And yeah. That is true.
Yeah.
Like, it makes it, as we've been saying, whatever Kendall can do to, you know, demean himself makes it easier for Logan to control him.
Indeed. Yeah. So then they have the blood sacrifice conversation, right? At some point, right?
They do.
Yeah, which is extremely awkward and painful, as you mm-hmm. would expect. And I also liked a lot of the way this scene was shot. Most of the shots, you have the camera is moving where there's somebody in the foreground talking, and it's like, I think it should be Tom. And like, Tom is in the background out of focus. And mm-hmm. it's kind of like the conversation is kind of like ping-ponging around to each character. Like, it's kind of every character is like playing tag, you're it, to right. every character except for Kendall, I believe. I don't think Kendall gets assessed at that point, right. at least not in depth as some of the other characters like Tom are. But yeah, I really loved how painful it was, loved just the way it was shot. I thought it was a great way of the filmmaking assisting in what the scene was trying to convey. So loved all that. What did you think?
Well, I think in terms of who says what when, I mean, obviously there are more participants in this, but I think the reason it works for Logan is that he, for similar reasons to what I was saying in the last episode about Shiv's conversation with Kira, which is the best way to manipulate her is to tell as much of the truth as you can. And that's what Logan does. He opens the conversation saying he thinks it should be him. And he might really think that, but if, you know, at least that is what he has been told others think. And so that's a good opening salvo, because everyone can be shocked and then they can all start kind of destroying each other while trying to protect him for reasons. I mean, I sort of feel like if he's willing to take the fall, it does make sense that it should be him, that Philippe was not wrong. And that's obviously the biggest blood sacrifice that you could make and the one that would be the most meaningful. But no one entertains the idea, and Logan can just sit back and let them, you know, throw each other methodically under the bus while trying to be extremely polite, which yeah. is the funniest part.
Yeah, like, hey, man, I love you, but ...
Right.
Right.
Yes. Or this is just an idea lab where, you know, human feelings aside, as if that's possible. Like, it's not, but
yeah.
sure.
Yeah. So pretty great scene. One of the centerpieces of the episode.
Yeah.
And then I think, right, like Shiv and Tom have their whole fight, and Shiv basically later comes to Tom's defense, right? Logan's talking with Shiv, and Logan asks her what she should do, and she kind of chickens out at that point, right? And she says, like, hey, I can't decide, thus proving that she kind of is inadequate for the role of CEO, mm-hmm. in my opinion. And then you know Logan says, like, yeah, this is it, this is the hard thing, you have to decide the hard thing, and she can't rise to the challenge, but she does throw herself in front of the train for Tom and saves Tom.
She does eventually, but what happens, yes, in the big conversation, it sort of ends with Tom is the big head,
yeah,
with maybe Greg thrown in as sprinkles, a Tom Sunday with Greg sprinkles, as they put it.
Yes, perfect thing to garnish your meal with is Greg sprinkles.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, with various other people, you know, proposed and rejected as the conversation goes on, and Shiv agrees with the people that propose Tom, who I think Kendall is the first one to say it should be Tom, and because he's the face of it, and there's the document destruction, and Shiv agrees. And when Tom calls her on it later, who's like obviously feeling very betrayed, this is when they're on the beach alone having a conversation about this and the threesome that doesn't happen. He makes her confront what she's doing, and she tries to protest in CEO language, which is, you know, I have to be an honest broker. And if it seems like I'm showing favoritism, no one is going to take me seriously, which is kind of true, but also kind of why family corporations like this are, like, you know, fraught. Maybe not built for the long haul. Yeah. Yeah, have problems like this.
Yeah. But then, like, later kind of like recants that, right? Later goes
she
back
does.
On it, basically.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
She understands, like, out of extreme guilt and compassion, defends Tom and theoretically prevents him from really getting toasted. So
yeah, although she does lose points, as you said, by saying, "I don't know who it should be. I just think it should not be Tom."
Yeah, it's rough for her. And I think we went into the season really psyched about Shiv. At least I did. And she has, in general, with some major exceptions like last episode, not really acquitted herself very well.
No.
And this is another example of that. So.
Right. So, yes. And then in between those was when Kendall and Logan go and meet Stewie, and Logan makes this proposal for how they could get out of this. And Stewie is just like, no, fuck off.
Yeah.
Because they think they have the stronger position, and that seems to be true. So then Kendall is summoned in to go and see Logan in a private office-y kind of a room where we see him sitting in behind a laptop, which I don't believe that Logan uses a laptop by himself. Like an iPad, sure. I don't think someone his age is learning how to use a computer in the last 30 years. Like that's a part of his working life. But anyway,
I think you're right about that. Yeah. Laptop did feel weird. It's like the only time we've ever seen him sit in front of a laptop in the whole show. Yep. I think. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. We don't know if someone had opened something and just left it there for him. Like it's someone else's computer that's still in there, whatever. Logan by this point has decided that, that Greg and Tom don't add up, and that, you know, he says they won't accept me. I guess he means the shareholders, even though that's what they said. I'm not sure what he means when he says they. Maybe the top.
I think he's just trying to make it so that Kendall's the choice of Kendall is inevitable, basically.
Right. Yeah. So he says, you know, what it boils down to is that Kendall did so well at the hearings, but that also means he's the face of the scandal. And so the optics make sense, and Logan trusts him in case things get so bad that prison time is actually threatened. He believes that Kendall wouldn't turn on him. He would just do the time.
Yeah.
Which is unbelievable. But then, you know, Kendall sort of just nods in his Kendall-y way and just takes it and doesn't really argue. But then he asks Logan, "Did you ever think I could do it?" And Logan says, "Do what? The top job? Oh, I don't know. Maybe," in his way that's like he's never thought about it.
Like he didn't even contemplate it seriously.
Exactly.
Ever, right? Yeah.
It's never crossed his mind. And so Kendall says, "You can say it." And Logan says, "You're smart. You're good. But I just don't know. You're not a killer. You have to be a killer. But nowadays, maybe you don't. I don't know." And then says, "Okay, are we good? You're good." Like it's like a replay of their conversation from the premiere. Where it's like, well, no need to dwell on feelings onward. So then Kendall says, "I deserve it. Maybe I deserve it." And he means after killing the waiter.
Yeah.
But Logan says it's not that. And Kendall says it's good to pay. But Logan insists it's not that. And then says, "No real person involved. You know, it's nothing."
Yeah.
So chilling.
It's a heartbreaking scene. And
it's horrible.
It's remarkable that we've seen, putting aside the NRPI, like that is in fact truly horrible, right? And truly horrifying. But it's essentially like what we've been waiting for since the finale of the first season. It's like, this is finally, like things have finally come to a head again, and they need to have a heart to heart. And like, this is the payoff for the finale episode. This is like everything that's you always knew there was going to be something that came back right in this way to finally screw over, like to finally dispose of Kendall once and for all because of his treachery and because of this horrifying thing that he did. And like, this is it. For all intents and purposes, I thought this was going to be it. Right. And that, did you think so? Like, did you think like, yes. That's the end of that chapter. We're closing the book on Kendall. That's it. Right.
I didn't think that was why. I didn't think that Logan had been like lying in wait with this as a chit to use against Kendall. I mean, he did, I guess, when it sort of bubbled up again and when they went to England and he made the visit and made Kendall go with him. I thought it was never going to come up after that. And I'm pretty sure that Logan didn't either. Like he's completely dumbstruck when Kendall brings it up in a way that like, Kendall has been desperate for a way to atone for that.
Yeah, I wasn't speaking literally. I just meant that act of Kendall killing someone and then Logan covering it up was like, mm-hmm. you know, a check that the show wrote that it like finally has to like cash now. Basically, it's like setting in motion this sequence of events that like now is finally coming to a conclusion, is mm-hmm. what I meant to say. Not necessarily that it would be specifically because of the killing. It's just like Kendall's in this kind of cosmic debt to Logan, and like mm-hmm. this is the final act that he's going to take to pay that debt off.
Right.
And, you know, whether it's because of the killing or not, you know, this is how it's going to come to its conclusion.
Right.
And I really, you know, loved the acting here. Jeremy Strong is probably MVP of the season from my perspective.
Yeah, for sure.
Right.
Absolutely.
This scene is shot with like super close up, like so close up that they couldn't even hold the focus on him for mm-hmm. a lot of the scene.
Yeah.
And then that kiss that he gives his dad at the end is just absolutely heartbreaking. You know, like he's theoretically come to terms with Logan's decision, understands Logan's answer. And of course, there's that moment when Logan says, "You're not a killer." And then, you know, the rejoinder is like, well, he is a killer.
He literally is.
He literally is.
I mean,
is
at least he's a manslaughterer, but yeah.
Always got to get that legal clarification.
I'm just saying, like, you know, this would help Kendall if he could confess. Like, this is the only way that he could possibly have peace.
Yeah.
Is if he can really, you know, atone for this in a way by actually facing the consequences of it. But the difference is, and I'm sure I said this at the time, the difference between Shiv and Kendall is that if Shiv had killed this, had been the one that was driving and killed the waiter, like, she would never think about it again.
Mm. Perhaps that is correct.
I mean, we may never know, but then again, we may.
We may find out one day. Any other thoughts about this scene before we get to kind of the final sequence of the episode?
No, but it's devastating.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
It's
heartbreaking.
It's great for the
we had the 1-2 punch of like the Shiv Tom stuff and then the Kendall Logan stuff, and I just like, wow, this is already at that point, Tara. I'm already like, this is a great episode of television. Right.
Yeah.
Nothing else. If nothing else happened, it would have already been a great finale. Right.
Right.
But of course, that's not where it ends.
No.
There is one moment where they have dinner. It's made clear to everyone that Kendall's going to be the one to go, and Roman will be made sole COO.
Yeah.
And there is like this kind of nice moment between Kendall and Roman, actually, where Roman almost feels bad, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so love that moment.
Well, I think Roman does feel bad. Roman knows that Kendall's not to blame.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you're right that, I mean, I think you said this last week that, like, in the season premiere, that Shiv and Roman had that sort of dark prediction where it's like, dad's just going to use you up and spit you out, and here it is.
Yeah, and at that moment, by the way, I was like, hey, I was actually right about something, Tara. I made the correct prediction.
You were.
For like a good 3 minutes, I enjoyed my moment of victory.
Right? Well, you were right about the blood sacrifice too, because I said it was Tom, you said Kendall.
Yeah.
And you were right about that.
Yeah. Was I?
So then,
right, the episode shifts into like, oh, hey, now we're going to watch Kendall give this press conference. Now, I mm-hmm. think you and I, Tara, as watcher, like keen observers of television, and I'm not saying like we're the only ones. I'm sure like lots of people realize when there was this massive lengthy buildup to Kendall going in front of the cameras, we knew something different was going to happen than what was discussed in the room, I think. Right?
I mean, look, I have to be honest. I really was shocked. And I thought the way the season was going to end would be more or less the same way that season one ended, which is Kendall pledging fealty to Logan.
Mm.
And like that would be in its way an equally dark ending for the season for Kendall just to take it.
Yeah.
Because he has to be the daddy's boy and to go in the press conference and fall on his sword.
Yeah.
So
and I was like, yeah, it would be a nice echo of season two beginning with Kendall giving a mm-hmm. press conference under duress. I mean, he didn't do a press conference in the first episode, but it was like, you know,
a TV
appearance, right?
Yeah.
Under duress.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it did feel like, but then like there's so much buildup, right? And it's like, mm-hmm. you know, if these people are good storytellers, which I think in general they are, they're not going to just show us the exact same thing that was just discussed. Cause why else have this big buildup, right?
Why show it? Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So there. So then, like the fact that they're like, oh, okay, you know, Kendall's walking through Waystar Royko, and it's like not clear what's going to happen there. I'm like, okay, something crazy is going to happen. We just don't know what it is. And I actually thought it was going to be Kendall confessing to the crime, right?
Right.
Confessing that, like, hey, I killed this person, and maybe even taking Logan down with him. Like, Logan helped me cover it up, right? And like, that would be the thing that happened.
Right.
I thought. But
which still could happen.
Which still could happen. But then that's not what happens. I mean, he just comes out guns blazing for his dad. And it's an amazing moment of television. Like, not only in the universe of the show, but just like watching it unfold. I watched it. We had a friend over tonight, and like everyone was cheering when, you know, they had the documents, like the Greg documents that he picked out of the fire paid off, apparently, right?
Yeah. Yes. So, to be clear, when you say guns blazing for his father, he starts his speech using this very conditional language where as soon as he started to talk, you could tell there was going to be a turn.
Yes.
Because he phrases it somehow like it has been. I didn't get the transcript exactly while I was watching it live, but it has been suggested that I would be a suitable figure to absorb, you know, the scandal. But the truth is my father is a malignant presence, a bully, a liar. He knew everything. They couldn't have done these cover up payments without his knowledge, blah, blah, blah. And we have the documents. So Logan is watching live. Shiv is with him. Roman comes in like partway into this and is like, everyone is insanely shocked. Everyone in the room is going crazy at the press conference. Carolina's on the phone, like swearing like crazy. Everyone is insanely surprised except for Logan.
Yeah, he's Logan not showing any reaction at all. Right, as far as I can
tell.
Like, and I think we're all wondering, like, is he going to smile at the end of the episode? But it just kind of closes. The episode closes on Logan's face with a very enigmatic look on his face.
No, he smiled.
Yeah, you think there's a little smile at the end there?
Yeah, don't you think the point of this is that they planned it?
What?
Why else would Greg be the one that went with him?
Oh no, I don't think that at all. Like, you think Logan and Kendall planned it?
I think this is some kind of 9D chess.
Oh,
where Logan
man.
Wanted to get out. He wanted to protect Kendall. This was just going to be an interim move.
No.
Making Kendall the head.
No, 100% disagree.
I guess we'll see.
100% disagree, because I think that your interpretation completely undercuts the significance of the earlier scene between Kendall and Logan. Because what you're saying, right, with your interpretation is that, like, that scene then, like, something happened between that scene and the press conference between Kendall and Logan that, like, modified the agreement from that scene, basically, right? Now, I believe that something happened that modified the agreement, but I don't think it was between Kendall and Logan. I think it was, like, Kendall surprising Logan. The reason Logan smiles is because he says, "You're not a killer." And Kendall's like,
"Okay, I can see that too."
And Kendall's like, "I'm going to show you that I am." And I think in the history of the show, we've consistently seen that the only thing these people respect is power, and to some degree, treachery. And like Tom like congratulates Greg when he blackmails him, right? And it's like, these people only understand, like, people who are extremely conniving and skillful and willing to execute their will and willing to, like, sacrifice others to achieve it. And this is Kendall demonstrating that on one of the biggest stages possible. So I think, like, when he's saying, like, when he smiles at the end, or he has this kind of look on his face at the end, it's like, you know, he's finally become his, like, final form, right? Like, I've been trying to train him to be this person his whole life. And now he finally has done it. It may be at my expense, but he's done it. What do you think of that interpretation, Tara?
Yeah, I can see that too. The other thing that I wonder, though, is the Marcia of it all, because she's not present. I think we said that. But he does bring her up in that scene with Kendall, where he's talking about that when she was around, they used to read to each other. And he has this whole thing about, you know, he liked to read her history. And you know, talking about a tribe or a people or something that would sacrifice a child to the sun, and that they discussed what could you possibly kill that you loved so much it would make the sun rise again. So I wonder if Logan is like thinking ahead to what can I do to get out of this. Marcia wanted me to quit. She wanted him to sell in the premiere. So if he's thinking this is the only way that I can do it with, I mean, I guess you can't say he saved face if he's the one who's going to be taking the blame for everything. But if they, depending on what papers they have, I don't know. I guess yours does make more sense. The only thing I'm hinging it on, though, is just Logan's reaction completely unsurprised.
Right.
Like, that's all.
I think he's just impressed because his son has finally grown a pair, as it were.
Yeah.
But so interesting. So when you're watching it, you're like, oh, this is like a big turnaround that was like theoretically. I mean, I don't know that what you said is impossible, but like I think we're supposed to read it as Kendall betrayed his father and his father respects it. That's kind of what I think is meant to be conveyed.
Right.
But that being said, I mean, what was your experience of the final moments of the episode? Like, were you?
I mean,
like,
I was shocked. I was proud of Kendall.
But then, isn't that undercut if it's his dad's behind it, though? You know what I mean? Like, if it's not his orchestration.
No, you're right.
That being said, I do think, I mean, the show does play some narrative tricks on you by not showing you the interaction between Kendall and Greg, right?
Yeah, it's definitely not the same day. Like, when they leave, they're in different clothes.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
I think it's, like, the day after.
So there's, like, Kendall and Greg have had a thing, and, you know, Greg's like, hey, I'm really sorry your dad's doing this to you, and Kendall's like, and then at some point, Greg must have divulged, like, I still have some of these documents that show that Logan was in charge, and, you know.
Right.
And that's where the season ends.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't believe, actually, that there was ever a universe in which Succession might not have gotten a season 3. Because that's just like, can you imagine if like that's where it ended and like there was no season 3? It would just be like, I want to see where this goes. Particularly because Logan still has some pretty huge leverage over Kendall. Like the whole manslaughter cover-up, right?
He does, but he can't really use it without implicating himself.
Yeah, at this point, certainly.
Because
Kendall has already, you know, shown a big spotlight onto all of Logan's activities. So
right.
So any other thoughts on the overall episode before we dive into winners, losers, quote of the week, and overall thoughts on season?
No, I think I said everything about this episode. Yeah. it was a journey.
Yeah, it was a journey. Pretty solid stuff. All right, well, on every week of The Sweet Smell of Succession, we like to talk about winners and losers. We like to name a winning Roy, a losing Roy, a winning non-Roy, and a losing non-Roy. Tara, who's your winning Roy of this week's episode of Succession?
I mean, we agree. It's Kendall.
Yes.
Kendall pulled off quite the turn.
Yeah. Now, as with other previous winning Roys, it might not be a very long-lasting win, you know? Like,
no.
His father could decide to take both of them down. You know, like, there's many, many things that could happen. And we've already seen Kendall in charge of Waystar Royco, and it didn't go super well, right? So it's not like, maybe Kendall's learned something since then. I think we have seen that this season. But for this week, I agree with you. Kendall Roy is the winning Roy of the episode.
Yep.
Losing Roy of the episode. What do you think?
Connor, he's broke. His girlfriend's a laughingstock. She can't write. And he doesn't get to run for president anymore, or else he has to somehow figure out how to finance it himself, which he's clearly not going to do.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty bad. Connor's in a tough situation, but my losing Roy has got to be Logan. I mean, I think that he has been betrayed by his son. He's been implicated in a variety of crimes and misdemeanors in front of a national stage. He already has his shareholders against him. He's already got this takeover thing, you know, that threatens to engulf his company. He's in a terrible spot right now. I don't see.
And his wife left him.
Regardless of what happens to Kendall, I don't see Logan getting out of this in a good way. So Logan is my losing Roy of the week. Winning non-Roy. Tara, who's your winning non-Roy of the week?
Well, I have Jerry. She's still on paper the CEO successor, as is brought up again in this episode. And even though her name is thrown out as a possible blood sacrifice at several points, every time anyone mentions it, Roman is the first to smack them down.
Yep.
And even so, no one really seems to take that seriously. No one thinks that Jerry's going to take the fall.
Agreed. And I think her being spared is one of the, to her credit in this episode. So Jerry being your losing non-Roy, great choice. My winning non-Roy, I should say. Yeah, my winning non-Roy is the pedicurist woman who the Wamsgams were going to have a threesome with, because you know Shiv is like, hey, should I go knock on her door? They're about to do it, and then they don't do it. And that is, I mean, if she had gone and knocked on her door, it would have probably been one of the worst threesomes that person had ever experienced.
I'm a little sad that we didn't get to see how awkward it could have gotten.
I agree. The show has not really been into like explicit, like there's been very little explicit sex on the show.
Yeah, this show is not very horny.
Yeah. There's been a lot of sex on the show, but we don't see a lot of it.
Right.
And it would have been interesting to see how the show tackles a very painful and awkward sex scene. But sadly, that's something we were denied this episode, very much as this woman was denied a terrible threesome. That's why she's my winning non-Roy of the episode. Losing non-Roy. Who's your losing non-Roy?
Well, I have Frank. It was hard to choose one because it's so much Roy action this week. But I just picked Frank because he's the one who gets named to take over cruises. Like, speaking of poison chalices, good Lord.
I don't know if it's a poison chalice. It's a cleanup job, right? So it's actually... Sure. But I agree. He has a formidable task in front of him that who knows if he can rise to the challenge. But it's either way, it's not a fun one.
No.
Good choice for losing non-Roy. Frank is your losing non-Roy. My losing non-Roy, Naomi...
Yeah.
Who is forced to leave a very amazing yacht while a extremely sad Kendall, you know, whimpers beside her.
No inflatable slide runs for Naomi.
Yes, indeed. her inflatable slide runs came to an abrupt end this episode.
They did.
Which is very sad. So, Naomi, my losing non-Roy. Okay, let's get to quote of the week and then overall thoughts on the season. Quote of the week... What's your quote of the week, Tara?
So this is from the scene where Kendall and Logan go out to see Stewie, and he rejects Logan's offer, and Kendall tries to get tough and go into a lot of threats.
Yeah.
And Stewie cuts him off by predicting what he's going to say, which is, and says it more or less with him, I'm going to cut your fucking dick off and then push it up your cunt until poo-poo pops out of my nose hole. Dude, it doesn't matter. It doesn't mean anything. You can threaten to stuff a million severed dicks into my ball back. It goes on from there to say they have the more shareholders. They're going to be fine. But yeah, that was his spoof of Kendall's threats was amusing to me.
Yeah, I agree. Great quote. My quote of the week comes from Tom when he's having confrontation with Shiv, and he's recounting his grievances of what Shiv pulled on him during their wedding night. He says, "Bang, Shanghai'd into an open borders free fuck trade deal." How he describes his wedding night, which is unfortunate. It's unfortunate, but I just like, man, free fuck trade deal. That's an open borders free fuck trade deal. I would. That's one of those things. I'm like, what a genius turn of phrase. You know, love it. Anyway, that's my quote of the week from Tom. So that's the end of the episode. But Tara, let's talk about overall thoughts on the season. I mean, 6 months ago, you hadn't even seen any Succession, right?
I'd seen the premiere. That was it.
So you've mainlined the first season, and then we've been recapping it week to week. And I mean, I think you and I both thought season one was overall excellent. I've seen that season probably 3 to 4 times all the way through. Like, I'm a big fan of season one of Succession. So season two, how do you think it compares to season one? Kind of highlights and lowlights for you.
Well, we've sort of talked the whole way through about, and you mentioned it at the top of this episode too, the storylines that have been sort of picked up and dropped. And there definitely are a lot of those, and I see a few that you've added here in the doc, so I won't say them on your behalf. But I would have liked to understand more about Ewan's whole mindset. I know you called him kind of a one note character, and I buy that too. But we still don't know who's financing Weisel, the whistleblower.
Yeah.
That's one. We don't know what happened to Lawrence. He used to be an opening credits cast member, and he like, you know, Walter got killed, and we saw him for like 1 second at our Jesties, and then we haven't seen him again since.
Yeah.
Marcia. Yeah,
Marcia, another character.
Yeah, Marcia.
We
don't even know where she is.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I do feel like there's a lot of stuff that maybe is, you know, breadcrumbs that are going to be picked up until later. Certainly this episode had a few of those that we've talked about. But I do feel like there's a huge amount of storytelling that, they've created a very big world, and sometimes it feels narratively unsatisfying as a viewer when it doesn't all tie up. But then again, that is life. So I guess I get it.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say overall thoughts on season two. I thought it was a great experience to watch the show and do this podcast with you. I mean, I think that, like,
yes, me too.
From a week to week basis, this show consistently delivered us. Kind of, if ever, you know, if we still had water cooler moments, like if we, you know, because of what the monoculture and everything is gone now, atomization and such. But like, if we still had water coolers to talk about TV shows with, like, every week, virtually every week delivered us at least one crazy water cooler moment.
Yep.
You know, when I think back on the show, I think of, like, Kendall's rap. I think of the
Shiv at the table at Turnhaven.
I mean, excruciating. You know, like, I think of Shiv with Logan being handed the job at the beginning of the season, right? Like, these are huge moments that, like, I'll like remember forever as part of my TV watching, you know, like just like indelible moments that I really enjoyed. So, like, overall thoughts on the season, thought it was great, thought, like, just got so much enjoyment out of it on a week to week basis, moment to moment. And then I think, like, another thing I really liked about the season is episode 5 ends with Logan saying, you know, money wins, right? And he's like, has just closed the deal with the Pierces, and he's like, money always wins. And he walks up the stairs, and you're like, wow, this is a cynical show. But then the rest of the season, and of course the show in general, then proceeds to kind of dismantle that notion, right? It is like, hey, money, he thought money won, but in fact, there's all these other factors that he didn't take into account. And in the case of the Pierce deal, it actually didn't even go through. Right. And that's what I really appreciated about the show, is that it's like, it makes you think it's this extremely cynical thing about, like, oh, all these people are super powerful and they have lots of money and that's all really all you need, even though they have some flaws, to put it mildly. And in fact, like, the show is actually dismantling the idea that money wins, right? That's what it is really all, like, the arc of the season has been that money doesn't win, that there's other things that you need, like, you know, morals and ethics. And that is sorely lacking in Waystar Royko. So
yeah. Although, I mean, until somebody in the company goes to prison for all of the people that died on cruises, I still think money wins is the truth.
We can at least
all
say
of these people are going to be so insulated that they never will have to face consequences. If Connor is so safe that he can throw away whatever his yearly allowance is on Will's dumb play and spend $500,000 on a Napoleon's penis that turns out to be fake and still just really have to go hit up the bank of daddy for $100 million bridge loan, he'll be fine. Like, none of the Roys is ever going to really face a consequence. The only consequence Kendall is facing is his own conscience. But, like, he may have to be in a position where he's on the plane and tell Greg, I'm not going to try and fall, you know, jump out the window because things have gotten so dark for him. But, like, whatever happens, he'll be fine, you know? Well, so I do think
Here's what I would say. I would say that the show doesn't prove that money wins, but that money makes you not lose. That's what I would say is, like, the tweak on it, right? Is that it doesn't money doesn't win, but it makes you not lose. There's actually an article I saw today. I don't remember what publication, but it was about how, like, as you said, rich families are often insulated from any negative impact of anything. It doesn't mean that they're, like, if you are a child of a billionaire, you will not necessarily be super successful, but you will not be, you know, in a terrible situation in general.
Right.
Right. And so, agreed that it's not like money, you know, that they're going to be in a bad situation. We'll see what happens with them. All that said, there were some things, there were some, like, head fakes that the season gave me that I was a little disappointed by, you know, like things that I thought the show would follow up on or would pay off in some way that never happened. One of them is, I think it was like episode 6 or something, the one where Roman goes to get manager training, and he, like, meets this dude who's, like, super cool, and who, like, sees through Roman's BS, but, like, they have a great rapport.
That was in Safe Room.
Yeah, Safe Room. And Roman says, like, hey, make sure this guy is like set up okay. It says to Jerry, like, hey, make sure like this guy like is fast tracked for whatever or like isn't in a good spot. And I actually thought like, oh, this guy is going to become a major character, and he and Roman are going to be like buddy buddy, and that would be mm-hmm. awesome to see Roman bouncing off this guy. Instead, we never see that character again. So that was right. a little bit of a disappointment, but whatever. Like, that's not a huge narrative deal. We've already talked about Naomi and how I felt like the Kendall-Naomi relationship was a little bit underdeveloped this season. Wish there would have been more time given to that instead of other things that theoretically are less interesting. And then finally, the biography. Like, what is that even going to be a factor? Like, are we ever going to see that right. again? You know, like, that felt like it was being set up to be a huge deal. And I don't think we even talked about it the last two episodes, right?
No.
So
yeah, she hasn't been on screen since Moe's funeral.
So it's like, are they going to drop it? I don't know. You know, like, it's hard to tell whether the show is just trying to reflect, like, in real life, sometimes things come up and then you don't talk about them again.
Right.
Or if it's just, like, rough storytelling. Hard to tell sometimes. Mm-hmm. But those are probably my biggest disappointments of the season in terms of I wish they had, like, followed these things up. And then in terms of the overall arc of the season, there's also this idea of, like, what was Logan doing in the first episode of the season? I think that, like, when he offers the job to Shiv, was that ever a genuine offer? Or was it a way to kind of take Shiv out of commission from being his rival as part of Gil Evis's campaign?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've seen a lot of people saying, like, yeah, it was a genius tactician move by Logan to, like, take Shiv out of commission by offering her, dangling this big job and then never intending to give it to her.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I actually even buy that. Like, I actually, to this moment, still don't know the fundamental truth of what happened in that scene. Like, was it a genuine offer and he changed his mind? Was it never a genuine offer? You know, like, I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on, like, what happened with the Shiv storyline this season?
I mean, I usually think that Logan does everything he does with his children to control them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I agree that did. You know, take her out of the Evis campaign, and that was good for him in the long run.
Yeah, and also she helped him out of a jam in the last episode too. You know, like, she became a useful ally, basically.
Yes. Right. But I think that she, by not being in the company, whether she was working for a progressive senator or not, whatever she was doing, she was not on his team as long as she wasn't working for Waystar. So I think that was a way for him to bring her in and make her one of his puppets in the way that she couldn't be if she was, you know, earning a living doing something else.
Yeah.
So I think that was he couldn't have brought her in with any kind of lower offer. And the how sincere he was about it, you know, I do think that he thought she was a contender or could be if she came in. And that's why, you know, he immediately was like, we'll have to put you through training and you'll have to do this and that. And, you know, you'll be CEO when you're ready, which was always going to be when he thought she was ready.
Right.
So, you know, I do think he meant it, but I don't think he thought she was going to be the CEO like in a year, like maybe in 10 years or maybe when he died, you know?
Yeah. 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 Well, so those are overall thoughts on the season. Thought it was a strong season. A lot of open threads that are left, like, dangling for the next season. And I guess as we close up, Tara, like, are there any things that you would like to see next season? Are there any things that you're hoping for next season? You know, are you even hoping for next season at all? Like, kind of, as you're thinking, as we're now, like, literally just ended, you know, like, an hour ago or so.
Yeah.
Is there, like, what is it that you want to see next, if anything?
I'm hesitate to predict because
I'm not asking you to predict. I'm asking you, like, if you could, like were God mode or whatever and could control sure. what was going to be happening next season, what would that be?
I mean, I already got my dearest wish, which is Connor's not running for president anymore. But as I keep saying, I want Lawrence to come back. I think that was a great underused character. So I wish there was a way for him to be part of the story again in some way. And there, you know, it's not out of the realm that he could be. It's a media company still. He's an editor still. So he could be brought in to, you know, run one of the papers that we keep hearing about, even though we don't really see them on a day-to-day basis. But What I don't necessarily want, and I feel like people are starting to that predicted that each season was going to focus on a different kid are probably right. That even Kieran Culkin is giving interviews where he says, you know, he thinks maybe it's going to be Roman season next year. I don't know if Roman is enough of a character to sort of sustain. He's to me more of like comic relief. And I saw what they were trying to do with him in this episode in terms of, you know, portraying his competence, but I still don't 100% buy it. So I don't want that. I still want it to be focused on Kendall's story primarily.
Hmm.
What about you?
Well, I actually think the Kendall-Jerry combo is like a potent one.
I agree with that.
Both in terms of like from an entertainment perspective, but also like in the show, I could see them being like a plausible contender for, you know, the throne. Mm-hmm. And so I want to see how that relationship plays out. Obviously, like now that Kendall's like mixed things up with Logan in a huge way, Logan doesn't seem like the type to go quietly into the good night. So, like, he's going to go out kicking and screaming, and we'll see, like, how that happens. And so I'm curious to see that. I want to learn more about Marcia as a character, you know? Like, mm-hmm. I feel like, talk about underutilized, like, that's a character who, like, I feel like has had a lot of promise. I mean, even in season one, like, if you look at the Marcia character in season one, you know, there's all this intriguing stuff about her. And like, where is she from? What is her end game? You know, like, and I feel like that very little of that got moved along in season two. And so I'd like more Marcia and find out like what's even going on with her. Like, it'd be good to know mm-hmm. what's happening with her.
Yeah.
The Shiv Tom storyline. I'm curious, like how much farther that is going to go, because it felt to me like Tom was saying like, I want a divorce or something mm-hmm. like that. Right. And so like, how is that going to play out? I'm curious.
Right.
Yeah, I would say those are my kind of top line things I'd be looking for next season. That's it, I think. That's everything. Those are overall thoughts on the episode and the season. We did it, Tara. We got through a season of the show. So, all right. Well, anyway, again, it has been so much fun to talk with you about this, Tara. And thanks so much to all of our listeners who have subscribed, who have left good reviews for us on Apple Podcasts, who have emailed into us at successionpodcast@gmail.com. It's been so great to walk through this show with all of you. Huge thanks also to Simplecast for making this show possible. If you are interested in starting your own podcast, check out simplecast.com. They're a great resource, and they are who help us to bring you the sweet smell of Succession. And until next time, you can...
Whenever that is.
And the best way people can keep track of that for you, Tara, is what?
You can find all of my doings on my Twitter. That is TaraArianO. And you can also hear me every Wednesday on the Extra Hot Great podcast and every Monday on Again With This about 90210 and Melrose Place.
And find me on Twitter at Dave Chensky. That's Dave Chen, SKY. I do an interview show every week. You can find that at culturallyrelevantshow.com or just search Culturally Relevant on Apple Podcasts. There will be no Succession episode next week, so there will be no sweet smell of Succession next week. But if you have any reactions to our thoughts on this week's episode, feel free to tweet at us or email us at successionpodcast@gmail.com. Until next season, probably. Hope you all have a good one, and we'll see you later.